The Martins are out sick. I think the whole family is sick with a stomach virus, and that explains their absence. And that was not put on the announcement sheet. Matthew chapter 25, 1 to 13. Let's talk about the parable of the 10 virgins. Beginning at verse 1. The kingdom of heaven is likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. And while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard. And behold, a bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. Then all the virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no less, there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. And afterward the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, open to us. And he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Well, let's begin by looking at what we ought to obviously look at when we study any of the parables, and let's look at the context to see if the context helps us to interpret the parable that is mentioned here in verses 1 to 13. I want to talk about some things that are mentioned before the parable, and then we'll look at some things that are mentioned after the parable, and the parable is sandwiched in between, which gives us some insight to what the parable is about. Prior to the parable, let's go to chapter 24. There was the discussion of the destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus had announced, beginning at verse 3, that there would not be one stone that they saw there standing upon another that would not be cast down. And so he's announcing that there would be the destruction of Jerusalem. The disciples didn't understand that, so they asked the question at verse 3, tell us when these things will be and what is the sign of your coming in the end of the age? They thought that's the same question, though that was not the same question. So in verses 1 to 34, Jesus gives the signs that would come before the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Following that, he answers the next question they asked, though they thought it was the same one. What is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? What about the end of time? And so beginning at verse 35, here's what he says about the end of time. He says, we don't know when that's going to take place. In fact, he says, no one knows at verse 35 and 36. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my word will not pass away. But of that day, that is the day the heaven and earth will pass away, an hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So first of all, he says no one knows when the end of time and when the second coming will take place. Beginning at verse 37, he says there's not going to be any warning. That is, there is warning in the sense God said he's coming again and there will be the end of time, but there's not going to be like the destruction of Jerusalem where there are signs that lead up and you know it's coming soon, it's going to be next week, and it's getting even closer. Begin at verse 37. As it was in the days of Noah, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. What does that mean? Well, verse 38 says, as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. That is, the flood suddenly rushed in upon them when Noah entered into the ark, and they didn't have a warning other than the fact that the flood is coming, but they didn't know that it was coming in 2 months or 3 months or it's coming now next week. And so it came unexpectedly and it came suddenly. There was no warning. Well, furthermore, I want you to notice beginning at verse 40 and 41, there's going to be the separation of the righteous and the wicked that takes place. The two will be in the field and one taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one taken and the other left. It is a separation of those who are righteous and wicked. At the second coming, there's going to be a separation between the righteous and the wicked. Now, beginning at verse 42, he makes the point we need to be ready for the second coming. So notice at verse 42, he said, watch therefore. Notice verse 42 and 43, watch therefore, for you do not know the hour that the Lord is coming. Verse 43, but know this, that if the master of the house had known the hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Well, you recognize that principle. If you know the hour the thief's going to break into your house, you'd be there and you'd prevent that or call the police, and that's not going to take place. It's because it comes unexpectedly. So here's the point, watch, because we need to be ready. At verse 44, now he says, here's what needs to be done in light of the coming of the Lord. Therefore be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect him. We need to be ready for the second coming of the Lord. beginning at verse 45 through the end of the chapter, his point is the faithful, there's the faithful and the evil servant. What is he talking about? Well, he said, who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give him food in due season? Blessed is the servant whom his master, when he comes, finds him so doing. That is, the master is gone, he leaves for a while, he delays his coming, and when he comes back, blessed is that servant when his master comes back and finds him doing what he's supposed to. Now notice at verse 45, there is an evil servant, though, that says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming. You might underline the word delay. It's going to be a key to something we're going to get to in just a moment. And he begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunkards, and the master of the servant comes in a day that he was not looking for him, and an hour he's not aware of, and he's cut in pieces and appointed his portion with the hypocrites. In other words, the evil servant says, you know what, he's not coming back, or he's delaying his coming. I don't know when he's coming back, and so he becomes an evil servant. And therefore, he's not ready at the coming of his master. So what was before the parable? Before this parable, because now chapter 25 beginning at verse 1 is the parable of the 10 virgins. So before that, he's been talking about the second coming. We don't know when it's going to be, and we need to be ready for the second coming of the Lord. Now let's go to chapter 25. We know verses 1 through 13 deals with the parable of the 10 virgins. What is it that comes after that parable? Well, beginning at verse 14, there is the parable of the talents. You remember that there was one who was given one talent, there's one who's given two talents, and there's one who's given five talents. And he has to give an account at the coming of his master. And so here is giving an account for what opportunities that indeed you have. Beginning at verse 31 to the end of the chapter now is a judgment scene. This is the separation of the righteous and the wicked. Those on the right hand and those on the left. We'll come back to that in a moment. But here is the judgment scene of those who are being separated at the second coming of the Lord, the very thing talked about in chapter 24. So here's the point I want you to see. The context deals with the coming of the Lord, the Lord's return. That's dealt with after the parable. It's dealt with before the parable. In the context says we don't know when he's coming back. We don't have a clue when that's going to take place. It may take place at any moment. It might be 100 years, 1,000 years from now. We have no clue. So what do we do about that? The point of the context is, both before and after, we need to watch and be ready for the coming of the Lord. So this parable has something to do with that, because that's the context in which it sets. Now let's get the parable, and then we're going to come back at the end of our study and make some application of that. Let's talk about the customs, first of all, that helps us to understand what's being discussed in the parable. Wedding festivities usually took place at night in the New Testament period. The bridegroom would go to the bride's house, he would get the bride, and then there would be a procession back to his house, and he brings her to his house. That'd be followed by this grand procession in which they carried lamps to light the way, and so that was part of the festivities of making their way back. Invited guests were allowed to join in the procession, and they would take their lamps and they follow along. Fred Wright in Customs and Manners and Customs of Bible Land said without a torch or a lamp, you couldn't join the procession or enter the bridegroom's house. And so you had to have a lamp in order to do that. That was part of the wedding festivities. That was part of the customs of the day. Fred Wright quotes from Alfred Edersheim and says, the lamps consisted of a round receptacle for pitch or oil for the wick that was placed on a hollow cup or a deep saucer, and which was fastened, for in some instances, by a pointed end into a long wooden pole in which you would be borne aloft. Some of them would carry them in their hands and others would stick them on a pole, Edersheim would observe, and light the way as they're making their procession through the procession for the wedding feast and making their way to the bridegroom's house. And so that was the significance of having their lamps and having oil in their lamps. They don't know exactly when the bridegroom's going to show up, but they want to be ready for that, and that's part of the custom of the day. Now let's talk about the story that's told here in Matthew chapter 25. Let's go back to our text that we've already read in verses 1 to 13. And the story is that there were 10 virgins that make preparation to meet the bridegroom. The 10 wise took extra oil. Now the text says they took no oil, but I think that's implying they took no extra oil because they had some degree, and we'll give evidence of that in a moment. The 10 foolish did not take any extra oil. And so here were the wise, they took extra oil, the others did not take any extra oil. Now look at verse 5. Verse 5 says, while the bridegroom was delayed, you might underline that. We just saw that earlier in chapter 24 and verse 48. While the bridegroom was delayed, what happened? Well, they slumbered and they slept. They all did, the five wise, the five foolish. They were sleeping while they're waiting for the coming of the bridegroom. Beginning at verse 6, the bridegroom comes along, and all go out to meet him, every one of them, the five wise and the five foolish. Notice beginning at verse 6, the cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out and meet him. The time has come. And then all the virgins arose and they trimmed their lamps. Every one of them go out, all 10 of them do. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. They had some degree of oil because they're burning for a little bit and their lamps are going out, the text says. But the wise answered and said, no, lest there not be enough for us and for you. So all went out, all trimmed their lamps. The foolish asked for the wise to give them some of their oil, but the wise virgins refused. That's what we just read. Now beginning at verse 10 through verse 12, the foolish virgins were shut out. As they went away to go buy more oil, try to make last minute preparation and try to get ready and get back over to the feast. Verse 10 says, while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in, and the door was shut. And so they come back saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. Verse 12 said, he says, assuredly, I do not know you. Now, I want you to notice the point. Now, we left off, we didn't read verse 13, and that's on purpose. Because I want to list that at this point as the point. We saw the customs, we see what the storyline was, but here's the point and the punch of the parable. Verse 13 says, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. That's what we saw back in chapter 24. And that's also implied in the latter part of chapter 25. Watch therefore, for you do not know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. You need to watch and be ready. Now what's been represented by the parable that we just saw? Obviously the bridegroom represents the coming of the Christ. That's dealt with in chapter 24 and also in chapter 25. And so the bridegroom represents the coming of the Christ. The coming of the bridegroom would be the second coming of the Lord, because that's what he dealt with just prior to the beginning of the parable in verse 1 of chapter 25. The virgins would represent the people of God, the children of God, those who are obedient and following him. And I'll tell you why that's the case in just a moment. The waiting would seem to have reference, the delay would have reference to the time of preparation for the second coming. During that delay, waiting for the coming of the bridegroom was the time they needed to be ready. Not when he finally comes, it's a little too late. The oil would seem to represent the preparation and the readiness for the second coming. That is, there needs to be a readiness. Those who had their oil, they were ready for the bridegroom to come. And so those who are ready for the second coming have made preparation. That's the point of the parable. So because that's true, the Lord is coming, he's coming again. We need to be ready for the second coming. We need to watch, therefore, because we know neither the day or the hour in which the Son of Man comes. And let's talk about the virgins, the 10 virgins. I want to suggest to you that they were all alike in many ways. You know, they were different, and we'll talk about their differences, but they were alike in many ways. I want you to notice that they all went out to meet the bridegroom. All 10 of them did. Everyone went out to meet the bridegroom. They all had lamps. They all were expecting the bridegroom to come. They all had knowledge that he was coming, but none of them had knowledge of the time of his coming. It wasn't that five of them said, we know when he's coming exactly, but these others don't have a clue. None of them had an idea when he was coming. They didn't know if he's coming at the next minute, or is he coming an hour from now, or 2 hours, or 3 hours from now. They had no clue. All looked forward to his coming. All of them were excited about his coming. All expected to be a part of the festivities. Every one of them thought they would be in the procession. All of them thought they would be invited with the bridegroom into the festivities and they would celebrate. Notice at verse 5, all of them slept and slumbered while he delayed. Every one of them, the wise and the foolish. Verse 6 says, every one of them trimmed their lamps, getting ready to go. They all had lamps that burned, at least for a while, for the moment. But there was a difference. What was the difference? Five of them were wise, five of them were foolish, the text says. The five wise were those who were prepared, and the five foolish were those who were unprepared. The five wise virgins, they watched. How do you know that? Look at verse 13, therefore watch, for you know neither the day. The point is, you need to watch like the five wise. They watched. But the five foolish did not watch. The five wise were ready. The five foolish were not ready for the coming of the bridegroom. And therein was the basic difference between the two groups. Now let's talk about the application, because that's the real point of the parable to us. What's the application? Well, we saw the point of it in verse 13, but let's make some application to us that we can use in our practical living the daily Christian life. How can we use that? Well, here's first of all. I learned from this parable that we need to be watchful and we need to be vigilant. That was the conclusion at verse 13, that we need to be watchful. Let's go again to verse 13. Watch, therefore. Here was the point. Jesus said, here's what I'm saying in this parable. Here's what I want you to learn. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. That's almost identical to what we saw in chapter 24 and in verse 42. Watch, therefore, for you do not know the hour in which the Lord is coming. And that was on the heels of the discussion of the second coming of the Lord. And it's going to come in a time that you don't know when He's coming. That was the conclusion and that was the point. I want you to get this point now about what the parable is talking about. This is a warning to Christians who are confident. And this is a warning to those who are confident. And to Christians who are confident, the people of God. It is not a warning to those, though it could, I suppose, make some application. It is not really, though, a warning to those who never obey the gospel. Here is someone who's never obeyed the gospel at all. It's not necessarily a warning to those who are hypocrites or those who've openly turned away from the Lord. Here is one who's living a hypocritical life and he knows it, and everyone else knows they're hypocritical. Or here's one who just completely turned away from following the Lord. But it isn't taken as a warning to those who are God's people who are confident. And how do I know that? Because both groups of these were quite confident. They were ready to go. It's at the last minute they realized, I haven't made proper preparation. R.C. Trench said, the purpose of the parable is to impress upon the members of the church their need for vigilance. It adds much to the solemnity of the lesson that by the foolish virgins are meant not hypocrites, much less the openly ungodly, but the negligent in prayer and the slothful in work. Nor is it that they had no all at all. They had some, but not enough. I say amen. What I'm learning from the parable is that we need to be watchful by careful obedience at all times. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3 just for a moment. That is another passage. It talks about the second coming of the Lord. In fact, the whole chapter is devoted to the second coming of the Lord in 2 Peter chapter 3. That the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise and the elements will melt with fervent heat, and both the earth and the works and all that is therein will be burned up. Since that is true, look at verse 11. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons you ought to be in holy conduct and godliness. We ought to watch by careful obedience. What does that mean? If I'm going to be watchful, I need to watch my words, getting ready for the second coming. Jesus said, every idle word that a man shall speak, he'll give an account of in the day of judgment. And this simply means I need to be careful of what I say. I need to be careful about that. I need to watch my words. Because we give an account in the day of judgment. If I'm going to be watchful, as per the context, then I need to watch my time. We need to redeem the time, make proper use of my time. Am I using my time wisely in the service of the Lord? Because the days are evil. I need to be watchful of my opportunities. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men. Galatians 6. To him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. James chapter 4. I need to be watchful of my heart. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. What's going on in my mind, in my attitude? What's my thought process? I need to watch my eyes, what I look at, what I think about, what I feed upon. Matthew 5, a man looks upon a woman to lust after has committed adultery already in his heart. I need to watch our actions. We're the salt of the earth. Jesus talks about example in Matthew chapter 5. We need to watch our worship because our worship could be in vain. We need to be watchful in all of those. But here's another lesson I learned from this parable. That we don't need to be negligent of some things. The foolish virgins were negligent. They were careless. They were short-sighted. They were thoughtless. They were not forward-looking. They weren't thinking ahead and saying, you know what, the bridegroom could come and I'm not sure we've got enough oil. Let's go get some oil right now, so that we're ready when he comes. Before they ever got to the feast, they should have thought of that. They were negligent. And I want to suggest to you that many are going to lose their soul by being negligent and failing to do some things. Look at James 4 and verse 17 again. To him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Things that we know we ought to be doing and we're failing to do that. Now what's interesting is in this context, let's go to Matthew chapter 25. Because in the context of this parable, remember the parable is in verses 1 to 20, verses 1 to 13. But now at the heels of that, beginning at verse 31, remember the judgment scene, and those that are on the right hand and those that are on the left hand are going to be divided, and there are going to be those who are going to hear verse 41, depart from me, ye cursed, and everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food, and I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink, and I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Now notice verse 44. They're going to say, when did we see you hungry and thirsty and a stranger, naked and sick and in prison, did not minister to you? When did we fail to do what we should have been doing? Now that's interesting that follows on the heels of Jesus' statement of being watchful. You can't be negligent like these foolish virgins were negligent. To be presumptuous and assume and take for granted that we have enough, like the foolish virgins, we may find out that we haven't enough. Now, here's evidence they thought they had enough. Let's go back to chapter 25 and verse 5. That while the bridegroom was delayed, while they're waiting on him, they all slept and slumbered. Why weren't they out going buying their oil? Why weren't they getting ready and checking their oil? They presumed they had enough oil. They thought they were going in. They weren't sitting there saying, we know we don't have oil, and when he comes, we know we're not going to get in, and we know we won't be a part of the festivities. They thought they had enough oil, and they suddenly realized they weren't prepared for the things that they need to be prepared for. Here's something else I learned. I learned from this that you can't borrow some things. There's some things you can't borrow and you can't loan. The five wise virgins were asked to loan some of their oil and let us borrow some of your oil, and they said, we can't do that. Because if we give ours to you, then we may not have enough for ourselves. Here's some things that you can't borrow. Do you know you can't borrow righteousness? If that could be done, and you say, I want some of your righteousness, well, if I gave you some of my righteousness, then I may come up short. And if I wanted to borrow some of your faith, then at the judgment, you may come up short. If I could borrow, let me have a little of your faith. Mine's a little weak, so let me have a little of your faith. Then you just might come up short at the day of judgment, and we both are left out. We can't borrow character. We can't borrow service, and we cannot borrow reputation. You can't loan that to someone else. You can't borrow that from family. You can't borrow it from brethren. And here's the point that we learn. Turn to 2 Corinthians 5 and in verse 10. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ to receive the things done in our body, whether it be good or evil. We're all going to stand on our own two feet before the Lord's judgment. And you can't borrow righteousness. You say you're part of a godly family. You may be, but you can't borrow righteousness from your family. You can't borrow it from your parents. You can't borrow it from your children, from your siblings. You can't borrow faith. You can't borrow righteousness, character, any of that. Romans 14 and verse 12 tells us that each of us are given account of himself to God. I stand on my own two feet, and you stand on your own two feet. And whatever faith I have, I stand on that. And whatever character I have, I stand on that. And whatever you have, you stand on that. And it may be greater than mine, but you're going to stand on your own. And I stand on my own. There's some things you can't borrow. I learned from this, there's some things you can't recall from Matthew chapter 25. And that is lost opportunities can't be recalled. Now, here's something about the foolish virgins. The foolish virgins missed their chance. They had a chance and an opportunity to get their oil earlier, and they just missed that chance. And they didn't seize the opportunity. They didn't redeem the time. They tried at the last moment, let's go get some oil real quick. But the opportunity's gone. It's over. It's done. It's too late. And I want to suggest you, let's go back to Galatians 6 and in verse 10. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men. Every day we have opportunities that may never come back to us again. Like what? Well, those open doors may be shut, like maybe to obey the gospel. And that opportunity we had to obey the gospel may be shut to us, and it may never be opened again. You might have that opportunity, but you don't know. Or maybe like the opportunity to correct our lives, 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 2, or Galatians 6 and verse 1. Or maybe like the opportunity to teach someone else. That opportunity, that window that's open, may be shut and it may never open again. Or maybe to plead with someone to correct their life and a brother to return, or maybe to even train our children. Maybe in the rearing and the raising of our children, and now they get up to a certain age, and now our opportunities to shape them and mold them in the right direction is gone. It's over. Lost opportunities can't be recalled. Those days and those years of possible service are forever gone. But I want to talk about something else I learned. there's some things you can't find. And what I mean by that, the foolish virgins cried out for mercy. You remember that? Go back to Matthew chapter 25. They cried out for mercy. They all trimmed their lamps, and they cried out for mercy. When they came back, according to verse 2, they found the door shut, and they said, "Lord, Lord, open to us." They cried out for mercy, but it was too late. And there may be some time that you'll find that you can't find mercy because the day of mercy will turn to the day of judgment. Let's look at one more passage along that line, and the lesson's going to be yours. In Matthew chapter 7. This was in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord," and beginning at verse 21, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven." And notice at verse 22, he said, "Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonders in your name? And then will I declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness." That is, they can't find mercy. It's too late. It's over. It's gone. It's finished. And so, why do I need to watch? What have we seen in the study about why I need to watch? I need to be watchful about the second coming of the Lord. Why do I need to be watchful? Because I don't know the day nor the hour of the second coming. He might come before we're through with this service. And then I might be dead and gone for many years before he ever returns. I just don't know when he's going to come back. I need to watch because it's easy to neglect, be neglectful. I need to watch because I can't borrow someone else's preparation. I can't turn at the last minute, the day of judgment, and say, "Can I have some faith? Can I have some righteousness? Can I have some mercy? Can I have something from you that I'll make it and I'll be prepared for the coming of the bridegroom?" I need to watch because opportunities will soon be gone, and I need to watch because after his coming, preparations can't be made. And I need to watch because the cry for mercy will not help in the day of judgment. If you're not prepared and your oil is not in your lamp, when the day of the Lord comes and you begin to look around and say, "I have no oil, would you give me some oil?" No one's going to give you any oil, and it's not going to be possible for you to be ready for the second coming of the Lord. That's the parable of the 10 virgins. It's sitting in the middle, sandwiched between warnings about the coming of the Lord, and we don't know the day nor the hour and need to watch because we don't know the day in which he's coming. A warning to those of us who are God's people who think we're ready. And we know we've obeyed the gospel. We do have oil. We do have our lamps. And we are serving. And we think we're faithful that maybe we haven't made the preparation we need to make. That's the warning of the parable. Have you made proper preparation? Are you a Christian? Are you a child of God? If you're not, would you become one this evening? Would you become a child of God by believing the Lord Jesus Christ to be the Lord and Savior and the Son of God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge the faith that you have, and be buried in the waters of baptism that you might obtain the forgiveness of your sins? Would you do that even this very evening? Or maybe you've become aware, you know what, I'm not ready. My oil's not enough. And I think if the bridegroom came, my lamp will go out. And I can't find any more oil unless I turn to the Lord. Would you do that even this very evening? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?